Welcome to the WBH Radio Podcast. My name is William Holly, reporting live from the campus of Brooklyn College, man. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope everybody enjoyed the holiday season. Going to try to do some special things here in the year 2018. I brought in the new year like so many people did, watching these college football games, specifically that Rose Bowl. You know, Georgia Bulldogs versus the Oklahoma Sooners. Now, there's an ongoing joke for Jay-Z fans. And the joke is that there's a Jay-Z line for everything that happens in your life. No matter the situation, you can reference a Jay-Z line. And watching that Rose Bowl made me think of a Jay-Z song. It's a song he did with Beanie Sigel called It's On. And in that song, Jay-Z said, "The reason why we lead the pack, this is a marathon. You start off fast, then you're wheezing in the back." So Jay-Z was telling people, the reason my team is in front is because we understand it's a long race, right? You guys, you start off fast, then you're wheezing in the back. And somebody seemed to forget to tell Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield that this college football championship is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's not one quarter, one drive, one half. You know, it's a full-on game. And the team that makes the most plays will win. Now, Oklahoma jumped out to an early lead. It was electric. The band, the fans are cheering. But Georgia just quietly stayed the course. Stayed the course and kept chipping away. When you have two evenly matched teams, heavyweights, the difference in the game is just one or two plays. That's it. And one play, one sequence that really stood out to me was right before the half. Oklahoma is up by three scores, 17 points, 31-14, right? They had just scored a touchdown, 6 seconds left in the half, and they're set to kick off the ball to Georgia, right? So instead of kicking the ball deep, they screwed up the kick and end up just kicking a little short kick, giving Georgia a short field to work with. Now, at the time, you know, you thought it was insignificant. There's only 6 seconds left. How much can Georgia do? I thought Georgia would do one of those Hail Mary plays, you know, where they toss the ball up and there's 10 people in the end zone and it just ends up getting knocked down. But no, Georgia understood that this thing is a marathon and every play counts. So with those 6 seconds, this is what they did. They throw a quick pass, call a timeout. They give themselves a shorter field, give their kicker an opportunity to make a kick. Again, they're not going for the home run. It's not a sprint. They were just happy just kicking a field goal, getting 3 points. So what was once a 17-point lead in a three-score game is now just two scores. Again, Georgia understanding, hey, man, we got a whole nother half to play. Let's just chip away. And that's exactly what they did, and they zapped that momentum. And I thought really that was the difference in the game. Coming out of halftime third quarter, Georgia was rolling. Oklahoma couldn't move the ball in that quarter. You know, I think Oklahoma and quarterback Baker Mayfield got sacked 5 times that game. I think it was 3 in the third quarter alone. Baker Mayfield kept dropping back, trying to make big plays down the field and end up getting himself sacked. Many would say, well, his line wasn't blocking him. His line failed him. No. It is the quarterback's responsibility. Hey, if those guys are bringing pressure, you know what you do, Baker Mayfield? You shorten up the routes for your receivers. You get the ball out quicker. Take a little pressure off your line. But no, they wanted the home run plays. They thought it was a sprint. I guess they didn't get that Jay-Z song. Y'all start off fast, but you're wheezing in the back. That game wasn't lost in double overtime. No, every play, the whole body of work counts. The plays are not just important in the end. Everything counts. And that mishap before the half, I thought was monumental. That third quarter when they kept taking sacks was monumental. Shout out to Georgia, man. They had an impressive young quarterback, too, Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm is a true freshman. For those who are not familiar with that lingo, true freshman, sometimes you have guys that they graduate high school and they go to college and they have what's called a redshirt year, where they sit out. It gives them the opportunity to work out with the team, you know, train, you know, put on some weight, but it doesn't count against their eligibility. But no, Jake Fromm, he didn't take one of those redshirt years. he's a true freshman, meaning this time last year, he was in high school. He was trying to figure out who he's going to take to the prom. So to come out there and to perform with that poise was impressive. Did you guys see that stage, man? They played in front of 90,000 people. You know, I'm not even a big fan of college football. I think it's a whole bunch of big schools beating up on little schools for most of the season. But no, this time of year is special. When you have those bands come out, those bright lights. My man D.A. used to always talk about, man, dancing under them bright lights. And all of those young men dance, man. Shout out to them. The other game of the day was Alabama versus Clemson. Now, this is the third year in a row these two teams were facing one another. And much was made about the trilogy. But I hate when they do that in college athletics because it's not like the same teams or the same players are facing one another. It's not Bird versus Magic 8 years in a row. No, these teams have graduated their players 3 times over. So really, it's just the same jerseys. It's not the same actual teams that are competing. But in the previous two matchups, they split. Alabama won 2 years ago, and Clemson won the national championship last year. Close games, exciting games. This one, not so much. Alabama won 24-6. But what I did enjoy was Clemson's coach, Dabo Sweeney. Dabo Sweeney is somebody who won the championship last year. He had no problem telling the world about it, how good he was, how good his team was. And, you know, even this year, you know, he enjoyed the spotlight. Any chance he get, he'd tell you how good those guys were. But in this third matchup against the great Nick Saban, your team couldn't even muster a touchdown. So you know what that makes me think, Dabo? That those 2 years prior when your team was handling business, making noise, that was about you having one special player and Deshaun Watson. Because when you were without that player, Dabo, you couldn't even register a touchdown. Going up against the great Nick Saban, somebody who has 5 national championships. He's not just a one-hit wonder, Dabo. In fact, he's not even just a one-school wonder. Nick Saban has national championships at 2 different schools, LSU and Alabama. Only 2 people in history to ever do that, Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. The cream rose to the top, and that was Nick Saban. Dabo, you looked out of your league, buddy. You looked out of your league, man, looking like a one-hit wonder. Seeing how much your team struggled just made me realize, man, that kid, Deshaun Watson, must have been really special. Because he had you going toe-to-toe with Alabama the previous 2 years. Back to the drawing board for you, Dabo. Every now and again, college football produces a few personalities. And one that had my attention was Oklahoma's quarterback, Baker Mayfield. You know, he's a fiery young dude. You can see him on the side galvanizing the troops. He got in trouble early this year because he had grabbed his groin when trash-talking an opponent. You know, probably not the ideal situation, but passion in sports is good. I'm not going to ridicule him for that. Fire is good. Galvanizing your team is not a negative. But I wonder, will he be able to make it in the NFL? You know, I have no idea. We've seen plenty of college players come through and succeed and then not be that successful in the NFL. You know, Johnny Manziel was one. But I will say this about guys like him. The NFL quarterbacks that succeed is similar to what's going on in the tech world right now. It's not the rock star personality that's winning. You know who's winning? The nerds. The guys that are willing to put in hours upon hours of film study. Hey, you want to go to the bar? Nah, man, I'm going to watch these films on our opponent this week. You know, you hear these stories about these quarterbacks waking up at 5 a.m., going to practice facility, and not leaving at 10 at night. Those are the guys that are winning. Does Baker Mayfield have that? I don't know. You know, we've never seen the quarterbacks that we've seen succeed a little bit more stoic, a little bit more reserved, as I mentioned before, kind of like the nerd guy. Let me study. Let me dissect the defense. Those guys understand what all 22 people on the field should be doing at any given moment. I don't know if we've seen that from Baker Mayfield. Let me give you a little trick, a little trick to point out the good quarterbacks from the bad ones or the not-so-great ones. The great quarterbacks, when they throw a touchdown or an interception, their behavior on the sideline is the same. Okay? When Tom Brady throws a touchdown or an interception, what he does is he goes to the sideline, sits with his offensive coordinator, and take a look at pictures from the previous plays to see what worked, see what didn't work. Because the ultimate goal is to keep allowing their team to get better. Okay, we threw a touchdown. Okay, what worked? How can we duplicate this? We threw an interception. Okay, what didn't work? How can we prevent that from happening? Again, the studiers, the analytic guys, the nerds, guys like Baker Mayfield, when they throw an interception, they go on the sideline and they sit at the end of the bench and they pout. Yo, dog, that's not helping us prevent from throwing an interception again. Guys like Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel, when they throw a touchdown, they go to the sideline and you see them at the end of the bench with their teammates yucking it up. Yo, so you saw that pass I threw? Okay, that's cool, but that's not helping us get better for the next play. You know, Cam Newton is that way. Cam Newton is a talent, but I don't know if people would claim that he's made the level of greatness similar to Drew Brees in him. When Cam Newton loses, he want to pout like a baby. He don't want to talk. He don't want to do anything. Yo, Cam, how that's helping us get better, bro? When he throws a touchdown or when it's successful, yo, guy, y'all saw how great we were today? All right, Cam, that was last game. What's up? How about getting next? Turn on the TV and look at a Tom Brady press conference, Drew Brees press conference. When you see them talk, you can't tell if they won or lost. You know why? Because the goal is always the same, to keep pushing. I don't know if Baker Mayfield has that makeup. We'll see. A lot going on today, man. We're going to get into some NFL news, NFL playoffs. Bring on a guest today. Check out my boy Frank Barrow Reedy. Thanks for listening, man. Hit me up on Twitter, at WBH Radio. On Twitter, at WBH Radio. Be right back in a minute. Welcome back to the WBH Radio Podcast. My name is William Holly. Got the NFL playoffs coming up this week, but before we get into that, I had a few individuals from the regular season that I want to talk about, that I wanted to highlight. You know, the NFL kind of had a down year as far as public relations go, but there was still some great stories and some impressive individuals taking care of business this year. Someone on my list that really caught my attention was Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay. Yo, the Rams hired a coach that was 31 years old. That took guts. That took a certain level of fearlessness that we rarely see from professional sports. There's a lot of individuals in positions of leadership, but not many of them are leaders. Okay, to go against the grain and handpick a young man that's 31 years old is truly impressive. So shouts out to the organization. But not only did they pick this young man, but this young man actually delivered. Myself, having worked in professional locker rooms, it's not easy to walk into a pro franchise and get these players to buy in. These guys are millionaires who are used to having what they want, when they want. But Sean McVay, again, at the age of 31, has been able to pull that off. Get guys to buy into his plan, support him, back him, and get the job done. Yo, last year, the Rams were 4-12. This year, they're 11-5. I can't help but credit Sean McVay with that. The team has the same quarterback, Jared Goff. As a starter, Jared Goff was 0-7. This year, under Sean McVay's tutelage, he's 11-5. Yo, that's getting the job done, man. I don't care what you say. When he was hired, somebody had to stand up on that table and say, no, we're not going to do like everybody else does and just recycle these coaches. The guy who looks the mold, he has the right age, been an assistant coach for years upon years. No, forget what the media says. Forget what the naysayer says. That's fearlessness. And again, Sean McVay has rewarded them. You know, him heading an NFL franchise at 31 years old, that's the type of stuff you see in freaking Disney movies. There was a movie like that, Little Big League, when the guy became the manager of the Twins or whatever. But that's not what we see in real life. You know, you bring the baseball analogy, swinging for the fences. Now, when you take a big swing and you're going for a home run, you're susceptible to the strikeout. The Rams could have fell flat on their face if this didn't work, and people would have killed them. Man, you hire a 30-something-year-old coach? But the Rams didn't care. They say, you know what? Yes, we're susceptible to the strikeout, but we might hit a home run too. And it looks like these guys have hit a home run. 31 years old, leading his team into the NFL playoffs. Just won the NFC West crown. Damn, son. What am I doing with my life, shoot? He 31 years old, and he heading the NFL franchise, and I'm here talking to you guys. Staying there on the West Coast is Jimmy Garoppolo. Quarterback Jimmy G. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo was drafted by the New England Patriots in 2014. Many people close to the team said he was the heir apparent to Tom Brady. But we've never seen him. You know, Tom Brady always plays. So Jimmy G was behind him. You know, you never heard a peep out of Jimmy G. And then Tom Brady gets suspended last year. And now here comes the heir apparent, Jimmy Garoppolo. He started two games for the Patriots, and the Patriots went 2-0. So everybody's like, oh, okay. Now I see why he was crowned the next up. But then Tom Brady comes back, and then Jimmy G is relegated to the background again. Now, most people in that situation, they might become disgruntled. They might say, hey, man, I'm good enough to play. I need to play. Get me out of here. Trade me. Pay me something. You know, we've seen grumblings. We've seen a situation like this get out of hand. But Jimmy G said, no, I'm gonna take advantage of my opportunity. The opportunity to be behind one of the best in Tom Brady. The opportunity to be behind one of the best coaches in Bill Belichick. And also one of the best offensive coordinators in Josh McDaniels. As a member of the Patriots, he's won two Super Bowls also. Okay, soaking all of that up, being ready when his opportunities have been called. Now, this past season, Jimmy Garoppolo was traded to the San Francisco 49ers. Okay, now it's on you, young man. What you going to do with it? Jimmy Garoppolo started 5 games for the San Francisco 49ers. Guess what their record was with him starting? They went 5-0. So hold on. This guy, when his number was called, all he did was ball out? All he did was ball out. The San Francisco 49ers were 1-10 before Jimmy Garoppolo got there. They put him in a starting lineup. They go 5-0. How remarkable is that? That is truly impressive. You know, he stayed the course in New England, you know, just biding his time. He could have fussed. He could have kicked. He could have screamed. But he said, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of this. You know, it made me think of the TLC song, "Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls. Stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to." You know, I'm going to take advantage of this backup situation. But when my number's called, I'm going to ball out. And that's exactly what he did. And the timing couldn't be better. You know why? Because he's a free agent now. He's going to free agency with a record as a starter of 7-0. You know what that means? Yeah, they're going to have to back up the Brinks truck for that young man. Pay him. What a time to be alive. Every time his number was called, he answered. He's given us no reason but to expect greatness from him in the future as well. You know, I think a lot of young athletes can learn from that. Don't be a cancer. Don't be a problem. Prepare. Take advantage of whatever situation you were in, whether it's a backup, whether it's starting a game here or there. And when your time comes, be ready. And that's exactly what he did, and the timing couldn't be any more perfect. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to put a lot of pressure on a lot of these organizations. What y'all going to do? Y'all got to pay him. Y'all got to pay him. Shouts out to Jimmy G, man. If you're a friend of Jimmy G, lunch is on him from now on. You got to stay with me here, because this is going to be sort of a long rap sheet, okay? So in 2013, this guy led the NFL in receiving yards. Pretty impressive, huh? It's a 16-game season. He only played in 14 games, mind you. Still led the league in receiving yards. Now, the following year, in 2014, he was suspended for 10 games due to substance issues. Now, the season after that, 2015, he was suspended for the whole season. He missed dang near 2 seasons. Now, finally, it's the summer 2016. The NFL reinstates him. So, finally, we get to see that talent come back to the field. Before he gets set to get back to the field, he turns himself into rehab. He says, you know what? I'm not ready to play yet. I need to work on my personal situation. checks himself into an inpatient rehab facility. So this young man has missed practically three seasons of his prime. His name is Josh Gordon. He's a wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. 3 years. Finally, he gets back on track and makes his return this past season. He makes his return on December 3rd. So he hasn't played a professional football game in 3 years. And in his first game back, he grabs 4 catches for 85 yards. What? All I've ever heard about sports, basketball, football, man, you can't just walk in off the street and do this, man. You got to prepare, training camp. He basically walked in off the street and was able to have a great game receiving. And I did mention that he plays for the Cleveland Browns, so that means his quarterback is not that good. That's a dysfunctional franchise. Man, that is truly impressive. I couldn't believe it that he walked in off the street after 3 years, guys. His last professional game prior to this year was December 2014. To battle back from the substance issues, the suspensions, and to be able to contribute on the football field again is nothing short of remarkable. Season they just played against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had 4 catches for 115 yards. That's talent. That's talent, man. I'm happy that he's able to get his life back on track and he's able to get back on the football field. You know, he's in the prime of his life, 26 years old. You know, many people left him for dead after those suspensions. Man, he'll never come back. He's done. And he's here, putting the world on notice that he's back. And last but not least, I got one more guy that was caught my attention. You guys familiar with defensive end for the Philadelphia Eagles, Chris Long? Son of Hall of Fame linebacker Howie Long? Now, this year, Chris Long has opted to donate his salary to charity. Yes, his whole salary. Playing for free. How about that? So what happened was the first 6 games, remember when they had like that Nazi march in one of those areas in Virginia? Well, that was Chris Long's hometown. Chris Long said he wanted to do something about it. So he said, my first 6 game checks, I'm going to donate to some scholarships in that area. And that was commendable. But after those 6 games, he said, you know what? That's not enough. So he opted to donate the rest of his 10 game salaries to the 3 cities in which he's played, which is Philadelphia, Boston, and St. Louis, to various charities. So this whole season, he's playing for free. Now, I was aware of that story. You know, it was impressive. It didn't get much fanfare. But recently what happened was former President Barack Obama was highlighting some stories throughout the year for 2017. Stories that he deemed highlighted what's best about America. And he highlighted Chris Long's story. You know, we all like to be acknowledged. And Chris Long was truly pleased about that. You know, Chris Long said, it's cool. It's an honor that would fly across one of our former president's radar. And then he went on to say, it's not about politics. You know, I respect the man. And, you know, that's why you do good things. He said, that's the whole part of trying to do good things in the community. Spreading positivity. It's an honor to be mentioned. I mean, how remarkable is that? You know, we talk about all the negativity. You know, sometimes people will send you a story like, yo, did you see this? Can you believe it? Man, I ain't on that anymore. It ain't about race. It ain't about class. It ain't about Democrat or Republican. Right now, it's just about good and evil. If you're doing good, I'm rocking with you. And Chris Long seems to be one of the good guys. So, shouts out to him. Shouts out to President Obama for keeping his ear to the street. But, yo, he spent 8 years serving his country working 16 hours a day. I would not be tweeting about anything, man. I'd be somewhere on a beach. What do conspiracy theorists have Tupac at these days? In Cuba? Yeah, I'd be in Cuba with Tupac, man. Now, this is an exciting time. We got the playoffs coming up, but it's also a dark time for many of the coaches. You know, a lot of the coaches get fired this time of year. Teams going in different directions. One situation that had my attention was Jim Caldwell with the Detroit Lions. Now, Jim Caldwell was fired. You know, I'm not going to debate about his record. Should he have been? Should he have stayed? But the issue I had with that is that the Detroit Lions just gave him a contract extension this year. Well, 2017, rather. So you go to him and tell him that you want him to extend him. You want him to be a part of the future. And then you fire him that same year. These type of decisions are the reason franchises are bad for years upon years, no matter who the coach or the players are. And the Detroit Lions are definitely one of those franchises. That indecisiveness, that lack of cohesion between the ownership, the general manager, the coaches, the players, is evident and shows why these guys are not good. Now, you may think, well, it's maybe a couple $1 million that we don't have the exact figure. But no successful business just hemorrhages money that way. They essentially are paying Jim Caldwell to go stay on his couch. That's not how good businesses are run, whether they have the money or not. The money you are wasting paying him could have gone to your player development department, could have gone to a better player or sports nutrition. I just thought that was a joke of a move from a joke franchise. Here's an extension. Here's the door. No good businesses run that way. Good businesses run efficiently. Everybody's on the same page. If you were going to fire him, don't give him an extension. Clown move. Another coaching change that has everybody's attention is the Jack Del Rio firing over in Oakland with the Raiders. The reason this has everybody's attention is because sources say that the Oakland Raiders are going to hire John Gruden. No big deal in that, right? John Gruden, ESPN analyst, Monday Night Football, does a good job. Former Super Bowl champion with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What's the problem there? The problem many people are having is that they believe the Raiders are in violation of the Rooney Rule. Now, if you're not familiar with the Rooney Rule is named after the late Pittsburgh Steelers owner Dan Rooney. And in summation, it requires each NFL team with a head coaching vacancy to interview at least one minority candidate. Let's have some diversity in there, right? Get some minorities in there. Let them compete for these opportunities. But if the Oakland Raiders already have their next coach, if they already know who they want to hire, then whatever minority candidate they bring in to adhere to the Rooney Rule, many believe is just a sham. Because again, sources say they want John Gruden. Look, if I had a football team or any business, chances are the people that I would hire, the people that I would want to work with are individuals that look like me. Individuals that come from my neighborhood. Individuals that probably went to the same schools I did. I understand how these guys end up hiring their golf buddies, right? People they know. I understand it. I'm a big fan of the Rooney Rule. I think the NFL has done a good job there. I don't think there's anything they can do, I guess, improve the rule or increase the numbers of minority as far as the rule goes. You know, you can't tell these guys what to do with their business. If they want to hire their friends, I mean, we just have to live with it. But the Rooney Rule is not to make sure these guys get hired. It's really to put their name on the radar. So if I'm a minority candidate and I know John Gruden is already hired for that job, I'm still going to interview. You know why? Because you never know who is in that room. You may not get that job, but that guy may have a friend at another team. And he say, you know what? Yo, we just interviewed this guy. You might want to take a look at him. Any chance I get to get in front of a room and tell my story, show them who I am, and let them know, hey, y'all missing out on a qualified individual, I'm going to do so. I worked with the Yankees, and I got to meet a lot of the great players, but I also got to meet a lot of the behind-the-scenes guys. And there's a gentleman up there. He's one of Brian Cashman's lieutenants, I would say. Brian Cashman, general manager for the New York Yankees. And he was telling me his story, how he made it to the Yankees. He said it was during baseball's winning meetings. Baseball winning meetings, all the teams, they go to a specific city and they talk about new technology and everything. And he was just waiting outside trying to get a gig. So finally he convinced Billy Beane, the general manager of the Oakland Athletics, to give him an interview. Billy Beane is the individual they made the movie about, Moneyball. So he interviews with Billy Beane. And Billy Beane says, hey, man, that's great. I love it. But, you know, we have our team established over here. But you know what Billy Beane did? Billy Beane got on the horn and called Brian Cashman. Yo, Cash, I just interviewed this guy. He's amazing. You know, our team is set. But, yo, you should take a look at him. And next thing you know, Michael Fishman is an assistant VP with the New York Yankees, and no decisions get made without him, without his input. So that Rooney Rule, minority candidates, get out there and sell your story. Let them know who you are. Keep trucking, keep churning, and I think it'll all work out for you. Now, if the NFL really wants to do something, the change they can make is letting some minorities into the owner circle. That's when we really start to see the change. And what better time than now, especially with P. Diddy vying to be the next owner of the Carolina Panthers. That's when we really need some diversity. And that's when you'll start to see different races as far as coaches and general managers. Change the ownership group. Let Diddy in there. You know, shouts out to Diddy. That would be truly impressive. You know, for the hip-hop community, for him, whatever. You know, somebody that used to be Mary J. Blige's backup dancer. You know, Puff Daddy spilling Moet in the tub in the Biggie video to being an owner. And truth be told, that'd be a good move for the NFL as well. The NFL, y'all have taken a lot of flack from your detractors saying, man, that's a good old boys network. It's nothing but rich white men who don't care about anything but their bottom dollar. If you let Diddy into that circle, that'll take some of the steam out of the fire that the naysayers are bringing your way. They can no longer make that claim against you. That'll be some good PR. If y'all want to talk business, letting Diddy in there would be some good PR for the NFL in the time when they probably need it most. You know, Patriots owner Robert Kraft already stepped out and said he'd love to have Diddy in there. We'll see. Take a break. Be right back. Welcome back. Your host, William Holly. I'm here at WBH Radio Podcast. Hit me up on Twitter, please, at WBH Radio. NFL playoffs coming up. But I'm not too big on the prediction business. We could talk about those games last week. Maybe I'll get somebody on the phone. Talk to us about what we should expect this weekend. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. But I am disappointed that one of the best teams, one of the teams that I really enjoyed watching all year, has to compete in these playoffs without their star quarterback. And that's the Philadelphia Eagles and Carson Wentz. Now, Carson Wentz was injured a few weeks back. Now, many might say, man, this is football. You know, freak accidents happen all the time, which is true. But what's most disappointing is that this injury was avoidable. Carson Wentz tucked his head and tried to run into the end zone between two defenders. As a quarterback, that is not what you should be doing. You are the CEO. You are the leader of that team. You are not just one of the guys. You can't just throw yourself in there. The team is counting on you. You know, what does everybody say nowadays? Oh, I'm a boss. Boss moves. Well, as a boss, you got to make executive decisions, Carson Wentz. Now, I know you're a nice, humble guy from North Dakota. You just want to be like everybody else. But, yo, truth be told, you're not like everybody else. And you can't conduct yourself that way. So to dive in there when your teammates are counting on you to lead them to the promised land was a mistake. Was a mistake, man. You know how much money you might have cost your teammates? Well, what do you mean? With Carson Wentz, they had a real opportunity to win this Super Bowl. For so many of those players, winning a Super Bowl can be the difference between being in the Hall of Fame or not. If you're in the Hall of Fame, guess what? Your signature's worth a little bit more. Your appearances after your career is worth a little bit more. If you got a Super Bowl championship, you might be likely to get invited to be one of these analysts on this network. Yes, Carson Wentz, All of that was on your shoulders. He's going to have to learn that he is too valuable to just throw himself out there. In the scale of things, that one more yard is not worth losing him for the season. Not even one more touchdown. Just throw the ball away. And like Pop said on Friday, you live. You live to see another day. You know, Carson Wentz, you're the president, buddy. You know, like, if something happened, the president got to understand that you can't pick up a gun and start shooting. Now we got to protect you. You're our leader. Everybody in this building got to get hit first before you get touched. And I'm sure for Carson Wentz, as a young guy, humble beginnings, he just, yo, these are my teammates. Nah, brother. Get used to it. You like the Pope, man. We need you out here. You riding a bulletproof car while the rest of us are on the front line. A lot of football going on, so I thought I'd call in some help. This young man is a fellow U.S. Army veteran. I met him here, and we were studying at NYU. But he's definitely a true Texan at heart. My brother, Frank Barrow Reedy. Barrow, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm excellent. Good to hear you, Will. Like, it's been a while.
Yes, been a long time. Now, Barrow, before we get started, man, I wanted to first ask you about your beloved Dallas Cowboys. What happened this year? Was the Ezekiel suspension just too much to overcome?
Well, I don't necessarily think it was too much to overcome, but when you have a GM like Jerry Jones who allows his players to go do whatever they want and with no repercussions, it bleeds into the culture. And what I think happened is we got distracted, that we became so focused on whether or not we had him or not, that our play calling changed, the structure of the Cowboys changed, and it just changed the dynamics of the entire team.
Wow, that's an excellent point. Now, when Ezekiel Elliott was out, you know, I paid close attention to Dak Prescott, and, you know, he kind of just looked like a guy. Do you think the Dallas Cowboys thought maybe we gave up on Tony Romo a little bit too early?
Well, I think the Tony Romo argument is played out just because I was never a big fan of Tony Romo, not because he didn't have the skills, but because his attitude and his heart for coming over adversity, I never thought was really truly there. With regard to Dak, though, I mean, he's never played without Zeke. For him, that's the only thing he knew in Dallas Cowboys football. And so when he suddenly had to change style, he didn't know what was coming. And if you think about it, the same time that he loses Zeke, he loses Tyron Smith, his blind side, his protection. And as soon as he lost both of those, he got skittish and he got scared. And so he started dumping the ball. And Dez, you know, being Dez, just talking all the time, it was just never going to work. And it just took some time for them to kind of change pace, change the style, be a little more trustworthy of the dump passes. They finally got it together, but by that time it was too late.
I hear you. I didn't realize he had lost his offensive line guy as well. You know, that's a big part of what they do over there. But let's switch gears to the college game for a minute. We had two big games on New Year's Day. What did you make of that Oklahoma and Georgia game?
I mean, that's the game of the century. Well, the modern century it is, but it may not be, you know, 100 years ago, all those Notre Dame guys talking about the Four Horsemen in the 1940s, where everyone was 6 foot and white. You know, it wasn't the same style of football. Today, that open style, that Oklahoma offense, mixed with that Georgia running game, I mean, what you saw was three running backs from Georgia that will play in the NFL and one quarterback that may be the best single-season quarterback for Baker Mayfield. But what you saw was sometimes that coaching, that comes to the question. Like when you saw what happened to Lincoln Riley and his play calling late in the game and in those first few overtimes, I think that changed it.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley coached for Oklahoma. I thought he got a bit skittish, and I thought Oklahoma just left players all over that field. But speaking of Baker Mayfield, you know, when analyzing, see, one of my frustrations with college football is that we watch these guys have great college careers and then they don't pan out in the NFL, right? So that it makes me question, what am I watching on the college field. So I want to ask you, Baker Mayfield, is he somebody that's going to play in the NFL?
I mean, the same way Blaine Gabbert or some of the other explosive guys. I mean, you've got your Tebows and your quarterbacks that have gone through the college game and who've been superior and are fine in certain situations within NFL, you know, wildcatting and special situations. But there's something to be said about the college quarterback that doesn't necessarily become the greatest NFL player. You know, maybe he becomes a Drew Brees if he settles down because he's a little undersized and he starts using that live arm. But I, you know what? I don't think it matters. I think they're two different games, and when people watch them as such, you know, there are going to be the studs, your Darnolds and your Rosens. But guess what? In college, these last two, you know, last year for those two, they didn't look like anything excellent, but they might turn into great NFL quarterbacks. Like Goff turned around, but I don't think Baker, I mean, I don't think he's on that same level.
Right, right. Let's switch gears to the Alabama game. Alabama versus Clemson. Much was made about the trilogy between these two teams, but without Deshaun Watson, the Clemson team wasn't the same. Was Dabo Sweeney just overmatched going up against Nick Saban?
I mean, Watson, losing him, you basically had a copycat quarterback coming in to replace him. And the style didn't really have to change. So Clemson was the same, essentially, style. But I think they lost more on that defense from last year's draft class than people kind of admitted. And, you know, they had some great wins throughout the season. I mean, the only real test, I guess, that they had was that Auburn game. That was, I don't know, it put them in the SEC kind of mindset. But Alabama got healthy. They got the linebacking core back. Even if their offense isn't great, they can still slowly pound the ball, and eventually they're just going to wear you out. I mean, they just played Alabama football.
Right, right. Nick Saban seemed to get it done no matter what the situation is. His run is
exactly.
His run has been truly impressive. Now, Barrow, looking forward to this NFL wild card weekend. We got the Titans at the Chiefs, the Falcons at the Rams, the Bills at Jaguars, and Cam Newton and the Panthers going up against Drew Brees. What stands out to you this weekend? What are you looking forward to seeing? What can we expect?
I mean, I think the most fun game to me by far is going to be Cam versus Brees.
I'm with you on that 100%.
Best game, because what you've got are two different style quarterbacks, but both leaders in their own right, both with great defenses this year because the Saints have turned it around, and Luke Kuechly and the Carolina team, they just know how to play. Like, what I see in that game is the guy that I actually think is the NFL MVP this year, and this might, you know, upset some people because they want, you know, your Tom Brady's and your Cam Newton's even, but I think the most important player to one team this year was Alvin Kamara with the Saints. That guy was so dynamic. He could do everything on the field for him. Kick returns, punt returns, running out of the backfield. That whole Adrian Peterson storyline, they ignored Adrian Peterson because they had Kamara in the backfield, and that's amazing. And so for me, that's the game I want to watch. I want to sit down. I want my popcorn ready and watch.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about Kamara. I turned on the TV the other day, and I saw him returning kicks. I didn't even know he had that in his repertoire. So, Barrett, I'm going to put you on the spot. This is the game I'm looking forward to most, too. Who wins, Panthers versus Saints?
I've got to say, it's going to be the Saints. You've got a quarterback who's already won it. You've got a style of offense that can take you on your heels, and you've got a renewed defense with Lattimore and probably one of the best draft classes in the last 10 years. I've got to say the Saints in this game, but I think it'll be fun because Cam is going to go crazy. I think he will try and take over the team, and it might be a good game. I see something like maybe 35-28, but I think the entire game it's going to be a back and forth between the quarterbacks and their ability to manage the ball, not get turnovers, and then control the clock. That's what I see.
Got you, man. We heard it here. My man, Frank Barrow Reedy. Barrow, thanks for joining us, man. We checking with you soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure, and I can't wait to get on with you next time.
All right.